Are we live now?
I'm recording.
You're listening to
Mumbrella Cast.
Mumbrella Cast.
Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Vivian Kelly. Joining me to break down your week in media and marketing is Mumbrella's senior media reporter, Hannah Blackiston.
Hello.
And reporter, Brittany Rigby.
Hello.
We're recording this podcast from Mumbrella's Finance Marketing Summit, where it would appear there are a few small children running around, coffees being made and private conversations happening. So you'll have to excuse us if there is some background noise, but we'll try and battle through. Coming up later, Hannah also sits down with former Pointless host and political satirist Mark Humphreys to talk about what went wrong with Pointless.
But the biggest problem was time, and just that there was not enough time to incorporate the comedy that I would have liked to, and in fact the comedy that we filmed.
Will political satire ever work on commercial networks?
Oh, it's got to be roast chicken. And I said, what's that? It's like, well, not too spicy, sort of something for the whole family. And it's like, well, then you'll never make a political satire show.
And would he try his hand at breakfast TV?
If I could put my own spin on morning television, yes. If I could do all the advertorials as piss takes, yes.
But first, this week's topics. MasterChef wraps up and loses its hosts.
Australian Survivor is back.
Seven's Olympics plan.
And Foxtel gets in bed with Netflix.
First up, as I'm sure everyone is aware, MasterChef wrapped up this week, but the grand final was overshadowed by an announcement from Ten that it would be parting ways with longtime hosts George Kalambaras, Matt Preston and Gary Megan. The announcement came as George was hit with a $200,000 fine as a result of his restaurant businesses underpaying staff by nearly $8 million. It's important to note here that Ten said that the reason they're parting ways with the three men is because contract negotiations broke down and it's understood they wanted a far bigger pay packet than they were already getting, but it is definitely interesting timing. So to jump back first, Brittany, George has become a very contentious subject in recent weeks. What are the details around this fine and sort of what went wrong with his business?
So he's been fined $200,000, which compare that to other punishments if you stole in other ways. He blames the whole underpayment as a result of poor processes, which have been in place for years and have led to almost $8 million being underpaid to his staff. That $8 million is split across about 500 employees. So that's approximately $16,000 per person that's been underpaid to them. He's saying that it's poor processes. I mean, it's his legal obligation to make sure that those processes are in place to ensure his workers get paid correctly. Like, that's a legal right to be made sure that you're being paid correctly. And that's what running a business is. Like, running a business is making sure that the processes that are complicated and hard and might require lawyers and might require some time and thinking get put in place. So,
and I guess, Hannah, it became a really big PR problem for Ten in that George's restaurant businesses are separate from the MasterChef franchise, but George is sort of intrinsic in the MasterChef franchise, and those three judges are purportedly there to promote best practice. And, you know, underpaying staff by $16,000 each is not best practice. They want to promote people getting into the industry. They want to show how fantastic it is. So to have him at the forefront of that brand had to be a PR battle for Ten.
Definitely. And to begin with, Ten were definitely saying that they were supporting him. They were backing him behind that. It was only a couple of days later that they said that the pay dispute had broken down. But it's a tough one because it is hard to say whether it was just good timing or bad timing, depending on how you look at it, and whether this was just a chance to get rid of them or whether it really was a pay dispute. And we've both had conversations with people who have said that they had heard that the three judges were looking for somewhere, the figure generally lands around somewhere around a 40% increase on what they were already being paid. So it is hard to tell. The three of them have also set up their own production company prior to now. So some people are thinking perhaps they're going to start shopping around what they've got. They're also a lot bigger overseas than they are here. There are other countries that love the MasterChef format, so they could have a lot more chance overseas than they do here. It's interesting. We got an email this morning. Jane Kennedy of Triple M spoke with Matt Preston, and she told co-host Mick Malloy this morning that she doesn't believe the issue is financial. And the way Matt was talking, she said Matt had said that they were a team, the three amigos, and that was the way it was always going to stay. So it is interesting. Perhaps 10 had decided they were going to get rid of George and then things went south from there, but I guess we'll probably never know.
And I mean, the irony of the three of them effectively unionizing for better pay while old mate George is underpaying staff systemically. I mean, if Gary and Matt think that that is the best move for them, that's baffling, because surely they've stayed pretty okay throughout this. It's very much been George Kalambaris has done this. This is why it's impacting the MasterChef brand, and this is why it's bad for him to be one of the faces of that brand. Gary and Matt were kind of very separate to that. Them essentially collectivizing with him, showing solidarity and leaving the three of them is not great for them, I don't think. And it's now kind of a collective MasterChef versus the three of them.
But think about it this way. It's been the three of them since the beginning of the show. This is the 11th season. It's been the three of them since the very beginning. There's no denying they've got great on-screen chemistry. They've obviously got a little, you know, thing that happens between the three of them where one person plays one role and one person plays another role. I can kind of see from their point of view that perhaps Matt and Gary thought, okay, if we let George leave, they're going to put in somebody else. If the show tanks after that, they're the idiots that stayed with the show. They've kind of left on a high. The season obviously hasn't done as well as other seasons have, but it's still pulling fairly good numbers. Maybe they honestly thought taking this risk is better than sitting here waiting for the show to tank, or sitting here and waiting for things to go belly up. Maybe it was honestly the best option they could see.
Opinion seems to be quite split on whether or not these three are intrinsic to the MasterChef brand. Mm. So there's one school of thought that, you know, is claiming this is Top Gear all over again. The hosts are the show is the hosts. You can't separate them. Without Gary, Matt and George, MasterChef is going to tank. And then there are people that think, no, no, it's about the contestants, it's about the food, it's about the challenges. And if you get the casting right next year in 2020, then 10 and MasterChef will be fine. Brittany, which school of thought do you subscribe to? Do you think MasterChef as a brand can survive without those three at the helm?
I do. And I think that fundamentally what MasterChef is about is the food industry, is about the cooking, the chefs, the restaurant, the dining setup, the whole experience of going to a really nice restaurant and eating a really good meal. The fact that one of the judges that's been with it for 11 years is profiting off that whole model and is becoming super successful off of those experiences while underpaying staff huge amounts of money is totally inconsistent with the idea of MasterChef, which is to mentor and coach and bring through the ranks upcoming chefs. I think that regardless of if Gary and Matt had have left with George, it's a situation that required 10 to really rethink the hosting panel. And I think that bringing in new chefs, new energy is what the brand needs. I mean, as Hannah said, it's been 11 years. Regardless of all of this, was the Gary, Matt and George show kind of on its last legs anyway?
Hannah, what do you think? Was it on its last legs, or do we need the three men there?
Thanks for that. I actually do disagree. I'm a bit of a diehard MasterChef watcher, and I texted my mum last night, who has apparently been living under a rock and was not aware, and she did reply with, won't be watching it now. And I strongly suspect that in the mum demographic, there's going to be a real push towards that. I think 10 have got an upward battle on their hands. I don't think it's impossible. I think they could completely rebrand MasterChef with three new, you know, probably more diverse hosts and could still have a hit on their hands. But I do think if we look at how intrinsically the MasterChef branding in Australia is linked to the three of them, I think 10 have got a real struggle on their hands.
Speaking of 10, up next, Australian Survivor is back. Australian Survivor is back, launching this week with 807,000 overnight metro viewers, which is the biggest launch figure the show has ever pulled for 10. Hannah, in addition to being a super MasterChef fan, you're also a super Survivor fan.
She's just a Channel 10 fan.
So they've brought back the Champions versus Contenders format again. You obviously watched the episode. I did not. Do you think it works?
I was so excited to watch the first episode. I accidentally forgot that I had something in the oven and burnt it because I was too excited. It did
you
work.
You would not work on MasterChef, Hannah.
She would. It would be great content.
I wouldn't anyway. I swear too much. But yes, I was really excited to watch it. I was a little, when they announced they were doing Champions vs. Contenders again, despite loving last season, I was a little bit concerned that maybe it would be a bit tired the second time around. But they're kind of crushing it. I think it's really telling that the show is building its audience. It's kind of backs what 10 are actually pretty good at, which is giving shows time to build a bit of an audience and also giving shows kind of playing around with formats a little bit and giving shows kind of some space to breathe and some space to find what works for them. I also think it answers a really important question that was kind of hovering over 10, and that's whether viewers were going to switch over, because we've seen 9 dominate the first half this year in that primetime slot. And so I think there was a bit of a concern that 10 would come in with their, after MasterChef obviously, but would come in with their flagship entertainment and viewers just wouldn't switch over.
As in they're not even sort of aware that it's on because they're not watching 10 and they're not seeing the ads.
Yeah, and this is what we hear time and time again of the danger of not starting the year strong, is that you can just continue coasting because nobody is watching your channel.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like why breakfast radio and breakfast TV can be seen to be so important, because, you know, the argument goes that if you're listening to Kyle and Jackie O, Kiss FM in Sydney on your way to work, when you jump back in the car in the afternoon, it's going to be on 106.5, so inherent human laziness means you might just leave it there and listen to Will and Woody in the afternoon or whatever it may be. I think people still think about that in the way of television, that, oh, well, if you've got it on 7, you might just keep it on 7, or if you've got it on 9, you might just keep it on 9. But I guess that Survivor's success here does sort of show that people will switch over for certain content, you know, not necessarily for Celebrity Name Game, but they'll switch over for Australian Survivor.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is probably also worth noting that 10 have chosen to bring Survivor back, or chose to premiere it on a Wednesday. Next week they're choosing to premiere Bachelor on a Wednesday. Wednesday is a very quiet night in TV. Nobody else is putting their big flagship shows on the Wednesday. So maybe there was a little bit of strategy in that. But they got the result they wanted. It was a good night for 10, which they have had few and far between this year. So all power to them.
And it tops the key advertising demographics as well, didn't it? Of those aged 16 to 39, 18 to 49 and 25 to 54. And 10 does like to say that it plays in the under 50s space. So even though, you know, there were other high rating programs such as ABC's Arne's Brush with Fame, I suspect that the demos there are skewed much older, and 10 wants that under 50s, and it looks like they've got it this time around.
Yeah, definitely.
Up next, a year to go, 7 reveals its plans for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. So with a year to go, 7 has launched its Olympics coverage for the 2020 Tokyo Games. They've made some pretty lofty promises, including up to 40 streams of each sport, 20 million broadcast viewers and 8 channels covering the content. Hannah, what else are they promising?
So they are promising it will be the most watched games ever. So they've launched a 24/7 channel, Olympic channel, which is at the moment covering historical footage. That's on 7 Plus. So that's just one of the channels that's going to be covering it. What they've kind of got on their side here is it's the first time since the 2000 Sydney Olympics that it's going to be in a really good time zone. Tokyo is only 1 hour different from Australian Eastern Standard Time. So that means they're going to be able to put this stuff on during prime time, which, considering how well sport has already been doing this year, I think it's going to be really interesting to see if the Olympics can carry that.
Yeah, the line from Seven, speaking of prime time, is that it's going to be prime time all the time. And that during that 2 weeks of the Olympic Games in 2020, they're saying it's going to be like grand final day every day because it's such a convenient time for Australians to watch. And I understand they also are seeking some enormous, enormous audience shares. So I've heard whispers that they think they're going to get 60% of the commercial free-to-air audience share. So that does exclude ABC and SBS. So if you're looking at who's watching 10, 9 and 7 during the 2020 Olympics, 7 says that it could have 60% of that audience. Now, I assume they mean on a network basis because, as you say, they're going to have stuff across the multi-channels, and I know that they'll also be pushing their digital views as well because they are sort of seeking around 5 million viewers on their digital broadcast platforms, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And it's interesting, they've also got on their side, we're seeing the addition of a couple of different sports for this Summer Olympics. Freestyle BMX is in there. I believe surfing and skateboarding are also both going to make their debuts. So those are kind of sports that skew towards a younger audience, which I think maybe is helping Seven as well. The fact that they're offering this across their digital platform so much, which is probably also going to skew a bit younger, they've got a pretty good chance here of bringing in a lot younger audiences. I would say perhaps traditionally the Olympic audience isn't that young, but maybe with these new sports they might see a bit more success in that area.
I've just been doing some Googling while you've been talking.
I'm glad I enthrall you so much.
Well, I just wanted to see what other sports might be making their debut, and I've come across some great headlines about breakdancing.
No, yeah, that's for Paris. That is for Paris 2024, guys. I'm already all across that story.
Breakdancing set to make debut as Olympic sport at Paris 2024.
Set your watches.
Yeah, wow. What a countdown. Brittany, would you watch breakdancing at the 2024 Olympics?
No.
I would, however, watch Hannah breakdancing. So
nobody else would.
Up next, Foxtel redesigns its platform and snuggles up with Netflix. This week, Foxtel has unveiled a new layout, increased on-demand content, and a partnership with Netflix for its next update. In an event earlier this week, CEO Patrick Delaney called it the new Foxtel experience and said it was able to offer the best in TV and on-demand in one place. Patrick Delaney on stage was incredibly enthusiastic about these changes. Honestly, it was so much enthusiasm coming from that man about the new Foxtel, and really strong language used as well. You know, he was talking about it being a revolution, and he almost seemed to give the vibe that Foxtel has finally done what it's been wanting to do for a long time. So it was a bit of like Patrick Delaney inception, in that he was on stage talking and he had an image behind him of him on stage talking in 2005. And he was talking about how back in 2005 they wanted to have better on-demand services and content and an interface, but he sort of said Australia's internet just couldn't keep up with Foxtel's vision and Foxtel's idea of what the subscription TV viewing experience should be like. Gosh, 14 years later, they've finally done it. Hannah, Patrick seems to think this is really innovative. What was your sense of this relaunch, and if it is innovative and revolutionary and 2019 worthy?
I would say it's revolutionary for Foxtel, just in the way that they've had a very traditional kind of program guide, a very traditional setup before now. The new setup, which is going to start rolling out, it looks a lot more like we're probably used to on streaming services. It's a lot more of that easy scroll and just keep scrolling stuff. They're starting to do suggested content, which sites like Netflix have been doing for a while. So basically, Foxtel is kind of emulating a streaming service here, which goes in line with them also partnering up with Netflix. So it's Foxtel and Netflix content side by side. Whether I would use the term revolutionary, I'm not sure. perhaps inside the what can be fairly outdated subscription TV model, it might be revolutionary. But I think in terms of where things have already gone for TV streaming, it might not be that revolutionary.
So the three pillars of the new Foxtel experience are the new interface, which Hannah, you've mentioned. They're saying way more on-demand content, and also this partnership with Netflix, which includes a Netflix button on the remote control. And as you say, footage, well, not footage, but programs side by side within that interface. So you can jump between them more easily. Patrick was really keen to spruik the benefits of this, saying, you know, you don't have to change your TV input. You don't have to jump from Foxtel to Netflix. You don't have to project from your laptop onto the screen or however you interact with the Netflix platform. He was sort of suggesting that's a huge problem for consumers and they find it really, really annoying. But now, hey, you can just do it all in one place. And for $58 a month, you can have Foxtel and the new Foxtel experience. And for 6 months, you'll get Netflix for free. Brittany, I'm not sure what your TV viewing habits are, but do you find it so annoying to jump between different platforms that you need it all in one place?
No. I have Stan and Netflix, and then also use the BVOD services like 9Now, ABC iView, etc. It's fine. Like, they all just have an app on your phone and you scroll through Netflix, and if nothing's catching your interest, you jump onto Stan. We have a smart TV, so Netflix is also available through the TV anyway. So the way that we watch is either Chromecasting from the phone to the TV, or just doing it directly through the TV, or asking Google Home, hey Google, play X. So it's super easy. I don't think that adding it all in one place is something that I would be sort of captured by, particularly as someone who isn't already a Foxtel subscriber.
And I really wish that this was a visual medium, but I think today I do, because I just can't explain how much Hannah is gesticulating and wanting to talk about this. Hannah, I feel like you have some feelings about the sheer inconvenience of jumping between platforms and how Foxtel have solved your greatest woe.
I really do. Let's point out how polite I was for not interrupting everybody. Also, Brittany, I'm really concerned about your inclusion of Google Home there, but we'll skip past that. I just don't know who these people out there are that people keep telling us are having issues switching between all these different apps.
Is it the 65-year-old Foxtel subscriber?
No, it isn't, because my mum is in that bracket. And even
my
mum.
Use your mum as an example.
I know I
for
can't,
everything.
But how many other 65-year-olds
do I have? The consumer.
We'll get her on the podcast, guys. Your phone is your remote now.
Yeah, 100%.
And you just switch between apps on your phone. And when you're Chromecasting, there's no problems. You just press the little button and it moves you between. As Brittany said, if you've got a smart TV, your TV does it all for you. I just don't know who it is that's out there saying, okay, yep, I want to pay $60 for Foxtel, plus I want to pay $10 or $14 for Netflix as well on top of that, just for the convenience of having them in the same platform. If honestly, I'm ready to be proven wrong. If someone can put somebody in front of me who's like, that's the convenience my life has been desperately missing, then I'm ready for it. But I would challenge anyone that I don't think that person exists in 2019.
I mean, you were both at the Foxtel event. Read a story earlier this week about Foxtel subscribers dropping out left, right and center, people negotiating deals in order for them to keep their subscriptions. Do you think this is about people who already have subscriptions that aren't happy with it, sticking with that subscription and being like, okay, maybe the convenience is worth it? Or is it being sold as a way to attract new people to Foxtel?
Well, look, Patrick on stage said that Foxtel has 1.1 million set-top boxes out there in Australian households, and this update will be rolled out. That's a massive project. He said they're starting now with the first 50,000, and I guess somehow we'll get from 50,000 to 1.1 million. So I think it is partly a retention thing, in that often some of the marketing challenges that Foxtel has faced is that they'll come out with a great new deal and existing customers will feel ripped off, because they'll think, well, hold on, I've been with you for 15 years and you haven't given me this fantastic deal. And then they're not actually allowed to get it. And so they feel like, well, you've put so much effort into marketing to new people. What about me? So Patrick was very keen to stress this is also for existing customers. Existing customers can get the new offering and free Netflix as long as they sign a 12-month contract with us again. So it's definitely a retention move. But for example, I do wonder how it will work because I don't have Foxtel anymore, but I have Netflix. So if I'm going to get free Netflix for a while, you know, I wonder about the logistics of it. And then if I keep Foxtel but don't keep Netflix, will it be really frustrating having that content side by side and not actually being able to access it? And I'm just not sure that, as Hannah said, like whether it actually will be as convenient as Foxtel thinks it will be, or if people would rather exist in the Netflix landscape in Netflix and exist in the Foxtel landscape in Foxtel rather than having it all mingled together.
It's worth noting as well, I spoke with Foxtel's Jane Eastgate earlier this year. She's the chief data and analytics officer who they recently brought on board. And she did highlight that cutting back on churn is one of the major issues Foxtel's got at the moment. So maybe you're right. Maybe this is just a, you know, stay with us. We've got some cool stuff rolling out. And there's no denying that the interface is a lot better than what Foxtel has had previously and, you know, all that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know. You also kind of wonder, where does this put them? There's a lot of whispers that with the success of KO, they're looking at perhaps a lifestyle streaming platform. Where does it put them if they're looking to move into streaming themselves? Where does that put them if they've got a deal with Netflix? And again, it's been raised time and time again. It's going to be a time when HBO is going to pull that content from Foxtel, which is a lot of what they've got to offer, is that exclusive HBO content. When that happens, is them being in bed with Netflix going to be a big enough pull to keep you on their platform?
Well, I guess we'll find out, but it is getting incredibly noisy here and I'm conscious that Brittany has to get up on stage at Mumbrella's Finance Marketing Summit in a matter of minutes. So we might leave it there for this week, but up next, Hannah sits down with Mark Humphreys to talk about Pointless's demise and what he thinks Australian audiences really want from that 6 p.m. evening slot on TV.
Umbrella's Hannah Blackiston, and I'm joined with Mark Humphreys. And we thought what we might do is get you to introduce yourself, Mark. So do you want to tell me what it is you're up to at the moment and where people will know you from?
Sure. I am Mark Humphreys. I'm Australia's fourth or fifth favourite satirist. I can be seen fortnightly on ABC's 7:30. Making political sketches. Prior to that, I used to make sketches of the same nature for SBS's The Feed. I was the host of Channel 10's Pointless quiz show for 184 episodes, but who's counting? And I was I'm the former president of the UTS Disco Society. I think that's where most people know me from.
Yeah, I think that'll be it. Yeah. So I wanted to get started on Pointless. As you kind of touched on there, it's not currently on the air, but it did run for 184 episodes, which is only two seasons. And it's funny when you look at, I was writing a story about Sea Change, which is about to come back. That did three or four seasons and only did like, say, 40 episodes. 184.
So you're saying that we were more successful than Sea Change? I agree.
Yeah. Write that down. 184 is a lot of episodes. Yeah. And you kind of leapt into it pretty quickly. There was some sort of Twitter campaign.
Yes. So, a couple of things there. I mean, yes, in terms of this, the quantity, I mean, we were filming five episodes a day, which was, you know, a completely new experience for me. And, you know, ultimately you kind of work out how to do it. And the answer is Barocca. But yes, that's how you manage to churn them out. But yes, just the backstory for people who don't know is that it's Pointless was a British quiz show airing on the ABC, which I still maintain, I think the best quiz show out there. I think the concept is so strong. It was sort of the reverse Family Feud, for, you know, picking the most obscure answer. And I loved it. I just loved it. And so I can't remember when it was now, but I guess it was a couple of years ago that I just tweeted, oh, if they ever make an Australian version of Pointless, I'd love to host it. And then, I went on Radio National and I said the same thing, actually. Someone later reminded me. And so then fast forward a couple of years and Channel 10 announces that they are going to make an Australian version of Pointless. And I, you know, semi-jokingly said, oh, you know, offer still stands at Channel 10 at Endemol Shine AU. I did my research of, you know, which production company it was going to be. But, you know, genuinely didn't expect anything to come from it. I remember being in France on holiday and seeing an article about saying, oh, Chris Barth for Pointless. And I was just like, oh, okay. I guess that's what's happening. But as it happened, I one day got a message at the feed to call a number about, I think they were trying, I think they didn't want to let on what it was straight away. So they said, can you, it's someone from Gogglebox is what I was told. I was like, and then I was like, Gogglebox, why would they be calling? And I looked up the production company, like, Endemol Shine, my, could it be? And so I called the number and it was David McDonald, who, wonderful producer, and he's also behind Lego Masters at the moment and a bunch of other things. But anyway. And he said, oh, I've got this tweet here that says you'd be interested in hosting Pointless. Are you – sorry, was that genuine or are you being satirical? Said, no, I'm genuine. I really, really do love the show. And we had, a 10-minute phone conversation where I think it probably came across that I really did know the show well, yeah, and was quite passionate about it. And I was – you know, and I already started – you know, I was like, you know, would you be interested in – would you be interested in coming in for an audition? And I was like, yeah, but only if you keep the prize money really low. That's very important to me. I don't want this to be a high prize money show. So I was, you know, I think the fact that he, you know, that I was aware of certain things like that, you know, oh, I want to make, please make sure that the laptop on the table doesn't actually do anything. I make sure it serves no real function. So, and he said to me at the time, do you imagine yourself as the host or as the sidekick? And I said, I mean, in my fantasy, I imagined the sidekick. I didn't see myself as a host. He said, oh yeah, no, I think that feels right. So we'll have you come in and audition as the sidekick. So I went along to, I don't know if I'm boring you with too much detail.
No, it's good.
Went along to a hotel conference room and where they set up a kind of makeshift version of Pointless with you know, butcher's paper and a little sort of spinning wheel and things, and then I was tested as co-host and then they said, oh, Mark, let's just get you up and just see what it looks like with you as host. And so I did that, and I was so absurdly relaxed because they're not going to give it to this guy from SBS Viceland, you know, like making 2-minute sketches. So it was, there was just great comfort in going, this will be a good story. And so I just had fun with it. And when that ended, I remember saying goodbye to everyone, like, I'll never see you again. Bye. Thank you for having me. That was tremendous. And in fact, one guy, I was like, I don't think we're going to see each other again, but I get the sense that you and I, it was something that he had to answer, because like, basically the production staff had to pretend to be contestants. And there was one question about I think Les Miserables, and I'm a big musicals guy. And the guy gave an answer that told me that he was a big musical guy as well. I was just like, look, I'm never going to see you again. Can we be friends? I feel like we'd be good friends. And so anyway, we have become good friends, but I didn't think I'd see them again. Fast forward, a week or two, and then I get another phone call, which I'm expecting to be there. Oh, thanks so much. It was lovely you came in, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, Channel 10 would like to see you on the set. And I was like, sure, they're welcome to it. And so I rocked up and I auditioned again. I auditioned with a couple of different partners. And But I also had something I had to do for – I used to do a weekly segment for ABC's The World. And I basically said to 10, look, I actually don't really have time to do this full audition because I didn't – they weren't going to give it to me. So it's like I'm not going to – like the World was a paid gig. Like auditions is not. So I was like, I've got to leave at, you know, 7 or something. And so when I auditioned with Andrew Rochford, we didn't even get through a whole episode. I think we only got through 2 segments. And Andrew tells a story that I didn't even say goodbye. I just raced out of the building. And just as I was jumping out of the building, I heard this voice behind me, Andrew, going, bye. I'm like, oh, sorry. Lovely to meet you. Good luck with everything. I'll never see you again. And I went and did the other thing. And then I got a call saying, Then I got a call saying, oh, how quick, theoretically, if you got this, how quickly could you leave the SBS? And I was like, well, I actually have already given them my notice unrelated. My writing partner and I decided we wanted to take a break from the writing. And so I said, well, theoretically, I guess relatively quickly, but cross that bridge when we come to it. And then, yes, they called up and said, yeah, you've got the gig. Can you start? Can you start Tuesday? And at that point, it was like Friday or something, or maybe it was Saturday. I can't remember. And so I called my boss at the feed. I was supposed to do a whole week of segments, and I called my boss, and Mike Clay, who was wonderfully understanding. I was like, Mike, I wouldn't ask this normally, but some freakish thing had happened. Can you let me out of my contract 4 days early? And he said, yeah, no, that's fine. So I did my last sketch, I think, on the Monday. And then I, 9 a.m. on Tuesday, I've got my own dressing room and someone asking me, do you like your water cold or room temperature? I don't know. I never thought about it.
Oh, no, we didn't ask that.
That's right. Yeah, it's cold, apparently, just so you know, listeners.
And then you got to set, discovered you were with Andrew Rochford and really felt bad for not saying goodbye to him.
I felt exactly. So he brings it up at every possible occasion. Hello, Andrew. I should just say now. And so that was the other crazy thing, is that Andrew and I had so little time together before we suddenly, we're doing promotional photos and having to record record the promo, and we haven't even recorded an episode. And some of the kinks of the show were still being worked out. Like, because they had taken a 45-minute format and condensed it to 22 minutes, it meant, whole chunks of it had to go. And they were still working that out when I got there. And because I think the first couple sort of run-throughs we did went way over time. So I was like, okay, we need to cut around. So it was really hectic, because I think, if memory serves, I think it was like there was that first week of doing those sorts of things, and then I think we were filming real episodes the following week, and so it was straight into the deep end.
And how much leverage did they let you have in regards to the script?
I mean ultimately they were quite a lot, but I think if I have any regrets, one is that I didn't feel confident coming in and putting my spin on things straight away. I just really felt like a nobody, and this was an established format, and I kind of didn't want to rock the boat or anything. It was only as I got more comfortable that I kind of pushed for more, to kind of toy around with the introductions and, actually, in fairness, it was a producer, Margie Bashfield, who said, because on the British version, it's always like, and this is my pointless friend, Richard Osman. And I think we did that for the first couple of weeks or so. And it was Margie Bashfield who said, why don't you mix it up and say something else? And so then that became a thing of like, right, I've got to have a different one every time. And then that became an albatross. That became complete chore. But it was, I do enjoy the sort of creative challenge of that. And then at a certain point, I was like, oh, maybe I won't just say, hello, welcome to Pointless. What if I can't remember the things I said now, but, things like, hello, thank you for letting me in your home. Mind if I take off my shoes and pants? those sorts of things. So they were very good about that. But the biggest problem was time, and just that there was not enough time to incorporate the comedy that I would have liked to. And in fact, the comedy that we filmed, it was so tight. And there's no one's, it was just an inevitability of condensing that format.
I'm not sure what the legalities behind this are, but if the show was to get picked up elsewhere, maybe the format got lengthened, maybe go to another channel, could it work in this market, do you think?
I believe in the show so strongly that I would say yes. I think I do wonder, I don't know, maybe it never could have worked on 10. I mean, maybe it could have worked with other people. I'm absolutely, I'm not saying that I was, brilliant and no one could recognize my extraordinary talent, although that happens to be true. it may well have worked on 10. But I know that in terms of the diehard Pointless fans who were already coming to the show from the British version, the biggest complaint I got was about how it had been cut down. Mm-hmm. So, I would have loved 10 to maybe even, you know, put us on at 9 o'clock or something. Yeah. You know, I that was something that I know that we had been sort of hoped for, that maybe, because also, you know, when it came to filming, like, I've got a very kind of, I don't know, blankety blanks style to things. And so sometimes I like to push it a little bit outside of the 6 p.m. family time slot. So, but anyway, I think it could work, but I think that what would have made the most sense was if the ABC had done it in the first place. But I might be wrong about this, and I'm open to being corrected. I get the impression the ABC can't give money away on quiz shows, or has made a choice not to. Hard quiz, they don't, you know, there's no money involved. And so if there's no money, that show doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because what is the final round
for,
if not to take, to win that jackpot? And, you know, there's the rollover element. So, yeah. So I think that would have been a problem as well. But, yeah, I'll never know. I'll never know. Unless I kind of, you know, years from now, try and relaunch it myself and force it down some network's throat.
If you relaunch it in a week and you didn't tell us here, I'll be very upset. Yeah.
I'll launch my own streaming service.
Yes. So it's interesting because that 6 p.m. slot has been a notoriously tough one for 10. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Family Feud, currently occupied by a Celebrity Name Game. It's that half hour slot which they seem to really want to shove a quiz show into. They're up against news on other channels. Mm-hmm. What do you reckon? This is obviously a wild speculation, but what do you reckon that slot needs?
Well, I had heard Channel. I remember someone from Channel 10, I think, going on Sky and talking about that maybe there was something inherently weird about having an hour of news from 5 till 6, then a quiz show, and then going back to a news show. Mm. So whether there was some way that you actually brought those elements together rather than having them be cut up. But that said, I know that, I can't remember when it was, 2010 or 2011, that Channel 10 had a 6 p.m. news, was it George Negus or something like that? So, yeah. So, it might be a case of bringing those two things together. Alternately, because I don't think there was a lot of overlap between the Family Feud base and the Pointless base, you get Grant Denyer, me, and Andrew Rochford. All right? We call it 3 minute a quiz show. I don't know what the premise is. I think the idea is that you have to guess the most obvious answer and the least obvious answer. So get your Family Feud and your Pointless fans, and we'll go from there. So that's my pitch. But to answer your question, I don't know.
And Grant Denyer would come up to approximately your waist, so it would just be perfect.
I'm not allowed to make those jokes, but he's welcome to.
So let's pivot now and talk about the other side of your career, which is political satire, which you've been in for a long time at this point, 6 and 7 years?
Yeah, about 7 years, yeah.
So a lot of that has been on ABC and SBS. Obviously, at the moment, you're working with 7:30. Before that, was The Feed. Do you think the political satire thing can work on the three big commercial networks, or does it need to kind of live over there in ABC and SBS?
I want to believe that it could. I'm certainly open to it. Yeah, I think, truth be told, if anyone could do it, I think 10 could do it. I think 10 is the, as far as the commercial networks are concerned, I really do applaud 10 for their, they do take chances on things. And I think the most exciting formats and ideas from a commercial standpoint tend to come from 10. So I feel like they've still got that slight underdog feel to them that I think that they could make that work. And they have satirical elements incorporated into the project from time to time, which do really well. So I think it could happen. I can't see it at 7 or 9. I'd love to be proven wrong. I once worked on a pilot for a satirical thing at 7, and I remember the note, this was years ago, and I just remember this note, which is so, I think this summed up why it would never work, which was anything that was kind of had a bit of like bite to it. The note was like, oh, it's got to be roast chicken. And I said, what's that? And it's like, well, not too spicy, sort of something for the whole family. And it's like, well, then you'll never make a political satire show. So if they can, you know, maybe get into just like hot wings or something else beyond roast chicken, then it could work. But yes, the ABC and SBS, also because they don't have, well, especially ABC isn't tied to any kind of commercial interests. You're free to kind of can I say, shit on a few more things.
Yeah. Do you think though the reason those commercial networks won't touch it is because are they underestimating consumers, do you think? Do you think they think, oh, our viewers, you know, our viewers want roast chicken? And maybe they don't. Maybe it's just they don't want to take the chance in case that's correct.
Yeah, I think occasionally, you know, I don't blame people for being risk averse. There's no, I think also it's that problem where there's no kind of track record. Like, they think this is the big problem with scripted comedy broadly, the commercial networks, is because they stopped doing it. There was no sort of business model for it. They couldn't kind of point to things and say, well, that works. So every time a scripted comedy show, you know, once in a blue moon pops up now on the commercials, I know I'm not alone in praying for its success so that the other networks can then go, oh, you know what? People do actually want to see, you know, scripted comedy. Because to me, it's baffling just on the scripted standpoint. You know, Young Sheldon and Big Bang Theory, these are scripted comedy shows that do incredible numbers. I don't believe there's really any reason for Australian ones not to be able to resonate the way that they used to, you know, back in the 90s. But yeah, I think it's sad the ABC has to be sort of has to lead the charge in that way. But you take something like Tonightly. I mean, this is it's interesting. Like, I think from a TV from a network standpoint, you look at something like Tonightly and you go, well, the ratings would, you know, why would we want to put something on air that only had, you know, whatever the figures were for Tonightly? But then it's that thing where online figures, astronomical. So if you can work out that business model that, you know, taps into the online shareability, then, you know, then I think absolutely there's room for it on the commercial networks. But if you're just looking at it from a pure traditional tune in at this time to watch something, well, I mean, I'm now going to contradict myself again. Have you been paying attention? It's a news comedy show on some level. And it's, I think, arguably TEN's, you know, it's one of TEN's most popular programs.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Have You Been Paying Attention is that they had to give it a chance. So when it, you know, it took quite a few seasons for that to really gain legs. It got moved into a later slot, moved back into an earlier slot, got extended. So maybe that's the issue. Maybe the fact is that TEN, as you said, TEN have still got that kind of, are still willing to take chances on shows like that and still willing to kind of give them the room to breathe that maybe they need to find their correct spot.
Yeah. I mean, I would, you know, truth be told, I wish they'd done that with us. But sorry, that sounds bitchy. I just mean in the sense of maybe six wasn't the right time for us, and maybe it would have been. I would have loved to have seen it in a longer format. But I'm not bitter. I tell myself.
So I also wanted to get your thoughts on. We recently saw a study from the University of Canberra, the Digital News Report, which kind of showed that Australians aren't really engaging with political reporting anymore, or whether they ever were. And people have kind of been saying, oh, it's because the 24-hour news cycle in this country means that any politician who will fill 10 minutes is getting brought onto the news to talk about literally anything. And then we saw yesterday the Australian was reporting that the Today Show has just put Pauline Hanson on a contract to come on fortnightly and have her views on things. How does that kind of thing make you feel? Do you think we're doing political reporting wrong? And obviously I should say that I'm talking quite broadly, but I do mean kind of in commercial spaces.
I mean, that's commentary as opposed to political reporting. I think in terms of Pauline, so I'm using a first name as if I know
it. My best mate, Paul Manley. Yeah,
sure. Look, that the Hanson thing, I hesitate to say this because I'll get messages, I remember being really annoyed when she was out of, no, sorry, I was happy when she was out of politics. During that period, I was annoyed by the sort of TV makeover she underwent through Dancing with the Stars and various other TV appearances.
Oh, my gosh, I'd forgotten she did Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, and I think that sort of rehabilitated her to some extent and made her palatable again to a lot of people and kept her prominent. And so that's sort of where the root of the problem is for me, was what happened in that period there. The one thing that I've read, the only thing that I would say, that if there is some slight sliver of a silver lining to this business is my understanding is that Pauline Hanson gives her contributions to charity for those appearances. That's the only thing I'm saying as a slight positive on that. I do think it's weird that we have federal senators going on and because those segments aren't necessarily always political. I think there's
no, that's true. It's really any commentary.
Yeah, so I find that odd. I mean, that whole world is difficult. Being a commentator is. I mean, I did Studio 10 a couple of times, and I found it really hard because I just don't have opinions on everything. I think people like, I think actually that whole team, people like Sarah Harris and Joey Hildebrand, they're really good at being able to, you know, have an opinion on things, and inevitably, you know, people are going to disagree with those opinions. But so, yeah, not fond of those little politician pop-ups. As far as political reporting itself is concerned, I don't have any particular issues with any of the network. I think they're all doing great work in their own way. I don't have particularly much to say about that. But yes, it's disappointing to hear that young people are not engaging with it. I know occasionally I hear people say, "Oh, I get all my political news from you." Oh, that's alarming. Don't do that. I need you to know the thing so you'll understand the references.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have a profound answer for how we can fix that problem. But I really want there to be an informed electorate. That's really important to me.
Yeah. So just before we wrap up, I'm going to throw out some wild speculations at you. There are a couple of potentially big roles floating about in the landscape at the moment. So I just thought I'd weigh in with you and see if you would be open to any of those. In particular, the Sydney Radio Breakfast on Today FM, they're kind of, Grant Denyer is there, but they are kind of struggling with ratings. And there are rumours that perhaps in 2020 we could be looking at some new hosts. Would you do breakfast radio? If you were to tweet about it and get the call.
Yes. Well, replacing Grant Denyer is my whole business model. I'll try anything, I suppose. I mean, I used to do, for about 5 weeks, I filled in on Radio Chaser on Triple M when I think Chris Taylor was away. And so that's been my one sort of foray into that. I think, you know, if you're paired with the right person, or people, then sure. But I'd be lying if I said it was some sort of deep dream of mine to do that. But I do the idea of maybe a house deposit. So I would not. I'd certainly go in. I'd be happy to go in for an audition. I don't know if I'm the right person for that. I just can't see myself. I can't see myself in that role. I suppose.
Well, so in a similar vein, morning TV gets a lot of conversation as well. Obviously, Today struggling a little bit at the moment. Channel 10 always flirts with the idea of moving back into morning TV again. Mm-hmm. If you got that call, would you take a morning TV gig?
If I could put my own spin on morning television, yes. If I could do all the advertorials as piss takes, yes. I'm kind of interested in the idea of a morning show of really just like, messing around with it and it would take so much work though. So that's the reality is that I probably would exhaust myself within a week or a day. I am kind of weirdly intrigued by that. But at the same time, I don't want to be someone who has to know about everything and has to comment on everything. I just think that's a horrible burden.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, just so when we wrap up here, what's next on your plate at the moment?
Well, I mean, and I say this knowing full well that things always fall through. And so you can do a follow-up with me in 6 months and ask, oh, how did that go? Oh, no, that never happened. So at the moment, I'm writing a scripted, obviously, writing a comedy podcast with my co-writer, Evan Williams, and also satirist Dan Illich. It is theoretically, everything continues on the path that it's currently on. It will be available in November. I can't say too much more about that, but that is theoretically what's happening. Though at any moment, the powers that be might go, you know what, we're good.
Yeah.
And so there's that, but I am doing it. And then in that similar vein, I'm writing a musical. Musicals are my major passion. And I think that's something that I would really like to move into more. even just as an audience member. And Evan, my co-writer, and Clark Richards, a friend of ours who's an actor, came up with this idea for a musical. I then took it to someone and said, oh, is there something in this? And they were like, yeah, I think so. And so we're kind of on the start of that process. And so if that happens, that's right at the end of 2020 that might appear on a stage. But again, like, you know, everything falls through. So, yeah, the reality for the moment is I eat a lot of chicken satay. I make pancakes. That's mainly what I'm doing at the moment.
It sounds amazing. Mark Humphries, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me in this very noisy corner, Brittany and Hannah.
Thank you.